Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm so excited today to continue with the health and fitness series with another wonderful health and fitness expert with us. This is Dr. Eric Magram. He is a strength and conditioning coach, or has been, and is now teaching the next generation of exercise science professionals here at James Madison University. I'm excited to get into a conversation with him today so he can share with us his story about how he got here. And also for you, some practical advice and tips to take your fitness level to the next level in 2025. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Eric. It's great to have you here today.
Great to be on, Dawn. Thank you for having me.
I am excited to be here. I've seen you at a couple of the faculty parties and picnics and things like that, and I've gotten to know you a little bit. But I'm super excited about our time today because I get to hear more about your story, which I don't know a lot about. So what inspired you to get into the field of strength and conditioning specifically and then transition out as a coach to a faculty member?
So it started actually as a junior in high school. I took a fitness class, and the teacher of that class was a mentor of mine, or became a mentor of mine, he's a sixth grade physical education teacher and a track and field coach and a strength and conditioning coach. And one of those individuals that just has is a ray of sunshine and is somebody that you want to try to emulate. And I thought, you know what? I think I want to be more like Mr. Sabo. And so I took his class, and in his class, he taught some life lessons. He also taught me how to work hard. And one of the things with weight training that's really unique is 1 unit effort, 1 unit reward.
So can you repeat that one more time for me?
Yeah, 1 unit effort, 1 unit reward, particularly in the beginning. So this is what they call newbie gains. So when you go into the weight room for the first time, even if you're doing push-ups or basic bodyweight calisthenics, you have a very sharp increase in stamina, endurance, strength, power, whatever it may be. And I latched onto that. And it was the first time I had really latched on to, wait a minute, if I give 10% more effort over here, I'm going to get 10 more out over here. And I was a bit of a chubby kid. And so one of the reasons why I wanted to get into the class is because I was in a marine biology class and I knew I was going to have to take my shirt off.
Oh, really?
Yep. And I wanted to be, when I had to do that, I wanted to look a little bit better. I wanted to feel better in my own skin. And so I enrolled in the class and I was like, all right, this is going to be the year. And it ultimately led me to being here. And I'll walk you through that journey, but that was the beginning of it. And then after my senior seasons, I was an okay athlete. I was slightly above average. I was the kid who tried really hard to be just average. So that was me.
It's a lot of us.
And so I fell in love with the process of lifting weights and trying to harden myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So both physically and mentally through the weight room. And I really just fell in love with that process. And then afterward, Mr. Sabo, I had actually started lifting with him and a few other gentlemen. And he said, why don't you come on and coach with us? And I was really only interested in coaching because I got a key to the weight room and I could go and lift whatever I wanted. And
your personal interest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have no shame in denying that. But that led to me helping other people, and that really filled my cup up. It really filled my cup up when I got to go in there and I got to say, hey, this is what you're doing when you're squatting. Why don't we try doing this? Or why don't we try this? Or this is the technique that we actually should be adopting.
And this is in high school.
This is just post high school.
So
I got the key to the weight room, if you will, because I started coaching. Started helping out the weight room and on the track. So I was a track and field coach and a strength and conditioning coach at the high school level. And then did that for a number of years. In between that, or about 2 years post that, I actually was in the Ohio State Highway Patrol, believe it or not, for a very short period of time.
Did not know that.
So I was in law enforcement for about 8 seconds, it seems.
Okay.
So I was in the academy.
Very quick.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was in the academy and I had a literally a come to Jesus moment. Mm-hmm. And it was, we were doing a routine traffic stop and I was getting feedback on the drill and I had gotten feedback. I was headed back to the car and I sat back in the car and I said, Eric, this right here, this is what you're going to be doing for the rest of your days if you become a highway patrolman. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I really don't want to be pulling people over and saying, hey, ma'am, you know how fast you're going. I don't know if that was for me, and there was a different calling. And then 2 days later, I severely sprained my ankle, which took me out of the class. And then I ultimately ended up going back to school and pursuing a bachelor's or an undergraduate degree in exercise science. And at that point, I came back to coaching. And so I thought, maybe I'm going to make a career out of this coaching thing. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I was going to follow in Mr. Sabo's footsteps and be a teacher and a coach at the high school level. And so I did my internship at East Tennessee State University. And I said, you know what? I think I really want to do coaching and teaching at the high school level. After 1 month of substitute teaching.
Just took 1 month.
1 month. I said, yeah, this isn't going to do it. And so
I like how you figure it out quick.
Well,
teacher, no.
My parents would have said, they would have liked me to figure that out quickly. My mom couldn't have been happier, though, for me to not want to go into law enforcement. Mm-hmm. She worked in the psych ward, the psychiatric nursing. Mm-hmm. So she knew she was... She said she always wanted me to go to work with her and see, hey, this is what you're going to be dealing with if you go into a profession like this. But so that was, she enjoyed that, that I was not going into the highway patrol. Nothing wrong with law enforcement.
No, we need it.
But just wasn't my path. Mm-hmm. So after that, I realized I wanted to pursue a graduate degree in sports science and coach education at East Tennessee State University. And I learned a lot about strength and conditioning, and I learned a lot about coaching there. And from there, at that point in time, I was a strength and conditioning coach for ETSU's volleyball team and an assistant coach for a number of other athletes.
Men's or women's?
That was women's.
Okay.
So I got to work with a lot of different sports there. I got to work with their, at the time, it was an Olympic training site. So they had weightlifting. We had bobsled. We had some track and field athletes. We had some NFL folks who came in. Very few and far between, but I got to work with some people who stood on the podium at the Olympic Games. So I got to work with many individuals who had worked at the USOC in various positions, whether that be the head of sport physiology. So I got to learn from, in my estimation, some of the best minds in sports science and coaching and strength and conditioning the world has to offer.
And USOC, United States Olympic Committee, right?
Yep. Okay. USOC, United States Olympic Committee. So I got to learn from them. I got to pick their brains. But at the end of my time there, I really asked myself two questions. The question was, Eric, do you have more room to grow here? Mm. And at that point, I had been around for about 3 years, 2 years of academic prep, but I had been there prior to that. So I was kind of had a 3 year time period there. Mm-hmm. So I was like, there's more I have to grow or more room for me to grow here, but I don't know that I'm going to get all the juice out of the lemon of this. At like 85% of the juice is already squeezed out. Mm-hmm. I have a higher ceiling elsewhere. And I asked myself the question, I have not answered what makes an expert coach or what makes somebody an extraordinary coach. I want to go study coaching, meaning like, how do you actually become a better coach? Because that's really what I was in the pursuit of. I'm still in the pursuit of becoming a better coach, a better leader, a better mentor. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I wanted to go study. Mm-hmm. And that led me to go to the University of Georgia, to study under Dr. Paul Shemp, to learn more about expert coaches.
Interesting.
And what separates those coaches from other coaches.
Oh, well, that's a great segue into a question I must ask. What is that? What separates them?
So there's a lot of things that separates them.
Okay.
One of them is content knowledge, but most of the time it comes down to relationships.
Really?
Yeah.
Anything else.
Yep. And that's where I think that's where it's sport can be so transcendent because it is about we are human beings and we want to be first thing before we really connect. We got to connect before we correct, if you will.
That's true.
And we have to do that through relationships.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that? We talk. We do what we're doing right now.
Exactly.
So that's one of the things that I found and in my own coaching pursuits, but also in learning from other coaches that are expert coaches, they connect. Like you have coaches that interview their athletes, and it might just seem like they're not interviewing their athletes. They're just saying, hey, Dawn, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
They're interviewing you. When you walk in the door, mm-hmm. when you go to your CrossFit class, when you walk into the weight room, they're assessing everything that you do. Is Dawn having a good day? Well, when Dawn wears that sweatshirt, she's not having a great day. Okay, when she wears this shirt, she's having a great day.
Feeling good.
When she's talking and having a good time, when there's no talking in the team, mm-hmm. okay, what do I need to do as a coach to get everybody's emotional temperature in the room to where we need it to have a good training session? That's what elite coaches do.
Right, and everybody's different because sometimes they're the quieted individuals. If they're talking a lot, that could be unusual for them.
Yeah, they attune to the atypical.
Yeah, tune into the atypical. That's such a good note. You know, you get told a lot that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
That is the basis around my entire coaching, leadership, mentoring philosophy. In fact, that is Mr. Sabo's coaching philosophy.
Really?
The kids don't.
Way back from high school.
Yep, the kids do not care how much you know until they know how much you care.
See, people, we want to connect. I'm glad we are doing a lot more of that. We had a pandemic, you may remember, where that was difficult. But
yes, it was.
But we're getting back into where we can connect more, and it's healthy for us. So would you say that is the pivotal moment in your approach to coaching when you went to the University of Georgia? I know Mr. Sabo started it. But it sounds like you had an epiphany, another one, when you went to Georgia in terms of what separates good coaches from the great coaches.
Yeah, it gave me sort of a recipe. So at ETSU, I really learned.
That's a Tennessee one.
Yeah, this was East Tennessee State University. So I really learned what to do in a weight room. Mm-hmm. And I learned how to sift through all of this stuff online and say, what's worthwhile, what's not worthwhile? How do I create a cohesive program that's based on science to change somebody's physiology so they can get bigger, faster, stronger, mm-hmm. they can endure more, they have more stamina, whatever you want to say. But I didn't learn how to coach it there. And I had a fair amount of skill at coaching and with mm-hmm. people, but I wanted more. And mm-hmm. I wanted to know how to become better. I wanted mm-hmm. to know what it was that did separate mm-hmm. expert coaches from not so expert, or maybe effective coaches from ineffective coaches. And that's probably the lowest barrier. And there's very simple things. One of them is connect. One of them is being able to astutely observe behavior, mm. like we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, when Dawn comes in, if she's not very talkative, I need to go up and I need to ask Dawn, hey, yeah. how you doing today? Like,
you do, because that is a problem. Quiet.
That's
he knows me a little bit.
That's just what we have to do. And that's not different than in a college classroom. And that's where a lot of the skills that we see in coaching transcend a business, and they transcend into a classroom, and they transcend into almost all other facets, because you're dealing with people.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes you'll hear somebody say, what do you coach? I coach people.
Mm-hmm.
You might coach volleyball, you might coach football or softball or lacrosse. You actually coach people who do those activities.
Yeah, that's true. Now, you coached the athletes. Have you also coached strength conditioning coaching for regular people that may never have picked up a dumbbell in their entire lives?
Yep. So one of the best experiences I had, so at the high school I was a strength conditioning coach and a track and field coach at, we had a weight room, and Mr. Sabo and a few other individuals have done a phenomenal job there. And the two of the favorite people that I worked with actually mm-hmm. did not play a sport ever in their high school career. They were two twins who were in the band.
That is awesome.
And they loved coming in. And we would work out from like anywhere from like 5:45 a.m. to like 7:15 a.m. And they were in there, or they would come in after school, and they would just get after it. And they would do all the things that the athletes are doing, the cleans or the snatches or the back squats or the
That's
front squats.
Amazing.
And they just said, we just love being in the environment. And that is what I love about strength conditioning. It's everyone in there walks in there, whether they know this or not, by the way, they are acknowledging they are not what they could be.
Mm.
And I am here to build something in me a little bit, to be a little bit more robust.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone in there is trying to get better. And that to me is so cool.
Oh, it's a shared experience. Sure.
Absolutely.
That's right. Now I articulated how I feel when I do make it in there, and I promise I'm going to make it more into the gym in 2025. I threatened it anyway on my podcast interview with the other funny woman who happens to be a kinesiology professor. I think the look on his face said some doubt, but but we promised we would do a pre-post when it comes this time next year. So we're going to do another health and fitness series in 2026. It's a great way to kick off the new year. So helping people kick off the new year, I do want to ask, let's ask and give some practical advice for a laugher out there who may have not hit the gym in a while, not lifted a lot ever, or has never lifted a weight in their life. It can be pretty intimidating to walk into a gym or a weight room, and what do I do with all of this equipment? So what kind of recommendations would you give to someone who wants to try but might feel a little intimidated to actually go do it?
So this is a great question, and I think I'm going to need some time to fully flesh it out, but I would say start.
Mm-hmm.
Start wherever it is that you need to start. And that one of the things that I've learned through studying psychology is oftentimes we don't do things because it's not because we don't improve. It's we aren't happy or humble enough to accept this amount of progress. We want this amount of progress. Mm. So I think it's starting. If you don't like to weight train, go out for a walk. Promise yourself you're going to go out for a 5-minute walk and do that for 5 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And then build on that. You know what? We're going to do 7 minutes today. We're going to do 10 minutes today. We're going to do 20 minutes. And then I am going to go open the gym door and walk out. Maybe you don't even go in. And this is a very behavioral approach.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is almost like with I can't find the words right now, but exposure therapy, that's what it is.
There we go, we got it.
They will expose you to something, and if you're afraid of elevators, they'll say, okay, let's go get 10 foot, or maybe it's we just see the elevator right now. Okay, I'm a little too close. Okay, then the next day they go 1 foot closer, and then the next day you get 1 foot closer, and then by the end you're in the elevator, maybe not riding it yet,
mm-hmm.
but we expose you, and that is the key.
Mm-hmm.
Find the smallest interval that you will do, mm-hmm. that you will complete, and go complete it, and then build on that. And I promise you, people who are progressing are not problems, even to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When you are progressing, it is, in my estimation, intoxicating when you get to say, I did two push-ups today versus one push-up today,
mm-hmm.
or I get to do this much weight for this squat or what. And it doesn't have to be super intimidating as long as you're comparing yourself to who you were yesterday or who you want to go become.
I love that. And there's so many resources out there today.
There really are.
There are YouTube videos. I have a Peloton. There's tons mm-hmm. of Peloton videos that you can take. I have the bike, but you have the app.
Yeah.
You have access to a ton. But that's just one of many, many examples available
right.
there to people. And then there's group fitness classes that
Absolutely.
Have a strength component.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is one of the early ways. I lifted in high school, but before I did that, I took some group fitness
yeah.
classes that had the strength component. And that actually was a little bit of exposure therapy. Mm-hmm. And my brother was playing high school football, and he said, "Want to come lift with me?" I was like, "Oh, no."
Mm-hmm.
But after I had taken a few of those classes, I was more open to doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The more communal we can make it, the more we can create what's called relatedness with other folks, the better of a chance we're going to have to continue doing that. And that's consistency is going to be the number one thing. I would rather I would rather you walk 5 minutes every day than walk 30 minutes one day.
Mm.
So I want you to be consistent, or I would encourage you to find something that you can do. For me, literally, it was, anybody remember the Ab Ripper X from P90X?
Oh my gosh, P90X, the bane of my existence. Which means it was good.
I didn't mean to bring up bad times.
Trauma time.
But I started my fitness journey before that class that I talked about. I did P90's Ab Ripper X every day for about 6 months. And I did this.
Well, you should have great abs.
I did this because it was something that I could do in my own home. It was in my parents' home. And I could just flip on the video. And I did it. And it blew the first time, and it blew the second time. And until about the 15th time, I was like, okay, I got this. I can do this.
I don't think I ever felt that way.
So yeah, I would say start.
Start is good, though.
Start, find something that you can consistently do. And then I guess I would have more practical things as far as identify where you're going to go.
And that's a good point.
And so if I'm going to go if I'm going to work on my garage gym, mm-hmm. have a time and a place that I'm going to go to. If you don't have a garage gym, that's not a problem. I have my own garage gym. I'm fortunate enough to have that. It makes it very convenient. But if you're going to go to this business.
Yeah, a gym.
A gym. If you're going to go there, you know what? Identify when you can do it and when you would actually have a probability of doing it. That's really important. Not, you know what, I'm going to go at 3 a.m. Like, no. If you are not somebody who's a morning person, don't promise yourself you're going to go at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m.
Yeah, I promise you I will not do that.
So go, okay, if you know you're going to, I do best at 7 p.m., promise yourself you're going to go there 2 times a week at 7 p.m. And then you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that we can build through exposure therapy and through success. We can build more adherence or consistency. And then beyond that, actually what to go do, do things that get you jacked up about doing them. Go do things that, even if you don't know what you're doing, go find a machine that you like and you're mm-hmm. like, you know what, this isn't very fun for you right now. Go find something else. And I'm going to contradict myself because not everything should be fun, by the way. But at the same time, at the beginning, there needs to be an element of fun in there.
I think so.
Because if everything is terrible,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to, you're not going to adhere to it. And that's why I say just start doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And this advice would obviously differ if I'm giving advice to a strength and conditioning professional, but this mm-hmm. is more advice for your laughers out there who are looking to get active. So number one would be start. Number two would be find some sort of consistency, something that you can continually do time and time again. Number three would be identify a time and a place and then maybe write up a contract with yourself. And
a good idea.
Maybe you tell your spouse or your friend.
It doesn't have to be a big one.
Exactly. Like,
piece of paper.
Yeah.
Post a note.
I want to try to go to the gym for the next 2 weeks, 4 different times. Can you ask me in 2 weeks if I've done that? And that for me, that accountability piece would actually mean something. And that's a lot of the time when I miss a workout, it's really me giving myself a hard time about, no, Eric, you're supposed to do this many times. So having that accountability piece is really important. And then having fun while you're doing it.
I agree with that. And not beating yourself up. So something happened, you know, the school called and you got to pick up the kid and
yep.
that's trashed your afternoon workout because you need to attend to that. That's now a priority. It is okay. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow is another day and you can just pick up where you left off. Yeah, we beat ourselves up way, way too much. And then also having my own experience, 20 years in health and fitness myself before I did all this fun stuff, there are gyms, if you've never been in one, they have people that are trained and paid to help you and show you how to use things. And then I have also, tell me if you agree, I have also, when I have frequent in the gym, especially for strength and conditioning, that the other fitter individuals in there are ready and willing to help you with a spot, or you can ask them a question. They enjoy talking about it and they want to help you.
They do.
Yeah.
It's we have to get past the affront that oftentimes feels like the Okavango Delta from the Serengeti over in Africa. It seems like there's...
I was like, what is that?
Yeah, it seems like an animal planet where like this peacock is strutting around. But actually, if you ask those individuals, I would be willing... That is an affront most of the time. And most of the time, those individuals will go help you. And that's what...
what I've learned.
Gym culture, like once we get through that fog that is the affront,
mm-hmm.
I think people are going to be very willing to help you. And if you ask, I would be shocked if they say no, particularly for spots. That's always something that can be done. That's always something that people are willing to do because you're wanting to do what they're doing already. And they
were there once.
They
were there when they were starting and they were didn't look like that overnight themselves. So they can relate.
Exactly. So I do think they are they're going to be very helpful if you ask for help. It can be very intimidating to ask for help, but if you muster the courage to ask for help, I would be shocked if you did not get the help that you asked for.
That's right. And if you did, that's really a them problem, not a you problem.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. I just have had really great experiences with that. You also explore emotional intelligence in coaching, and I really don't even know what that means exactly. So I would, rather than just pretend I know, I'm going to ask you, because what you do? What is this?
Yeah, so emotional intelligence is essentially your ability to assess or identify, assess, and then deal with emotions. And that can be within yourself or that can be within others. So it goes back to the astutely observing behavior. And it really becomes you identify something that changes the relationship between an organism and its relationship between an organism and its surroundings.
Okay.
So for example,
this is comprehensive. This is in yourself.
Yes.
Outside of
this is in yourself and this is in others. So for example, if somebody walked in here right now and started playing death metal music, our relationship, organism one and organism two, our relationship with this surrounding is going to be changed vastly.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to, for me, it's a negative. I don't know if you listen to death metal, but I'm not a big death metal person.
It is different.
So, so it's
different strokes for different folks.
It's absolutely going to change how we interact. It's going to create some emotions. And if they knew a podcast was going on and they did it anyway, that's going to create some rage in me particularly because
it would be feeling rude.
Yes, exactly.
And interruptive.
And so that is just a very quick illustration of what emotional intelligence is. I would have to acknowledge, all right, Eric, and there's a little Eric on each side of the shoulder, if you will, and saying,
we all have those.
All right, Eric.
Not Eric's maybe, but.
Right. all right, Eric, what are you feeling right now, little buddy?
Well, I'm feeling a little peeved or a little frustrated or downright pissed off.
Mm-hmm. Okay, why?
And then you go through it. Or you can then flip it and say, okay, this person, Dawn's usually smiling and happy and asking how you're doing. And all of a sudden today, you don't get the same interaction with Dawn. Okay, why is that?
So did something happen?
Yeah, did something
change?
Yeah, and then I say, Dawn, you know, I noticed you're just not quite yourself today. Yeah, when I was coming here to do the podcast and my tire blew out and it took me 35 minutes and I was on 81 and I was worried and I'm just still coming down from that experience. Rightfully so. That would not be a great day.
No, it would not.
Or something else, maybe even like, yeah, if let's say an athlete comes into the classroom or the weight room and they're really looking stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they didn't sleep. Maybe they didn't get anything to eat because they were up studying so much because they were worried about this this bald guy's exam that they got to go take.
So would that be yours?
It might be. So all these things are really just, okay, looking at human behavior and then trying to assess the atypical, essentially. Like, what is somebody's norm? And I always liken this to a thermometer not a thermometer. What's the thing? I can't find my words right now. That in your house, thermostat.
Yeah, there we go.
So you set your thermostat to, let's say, 70 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And people's emotional temperature should be, quote unquote, normal. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it might be 71 plus or minus. So you have a general situation that looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But on one day, it's up here and it's usually here or it's down here. And you have to be able to say, what's going on here? And then hopefully ask them questions to gather data from a coaching perspective to then get them back to within, quote unquote, normal or more like normal. So, for example, one of the things with my volleyball team at ETSU was if they weren't chatty before a weight session, something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like if there was this much chatter, that meant, and this is normal, if there's only this much chatter, I know something's going on. And if it's silent, something bad is going on. Or if it's way too chatty, then, so again, we got to monitor the level and, okay, are we actually going to get something out of the session? Okay, I know we're fatigued or whatnot, but we got to get something out of this. And it's really trying to get the best out of folks with emotions because emotions rule us. Whether we know it or not, emotions rule us. So if
you make emotional decisions, we do all the time.
Exactly. Impulse buys by the register. That's an emotional thing. Like, oh, I want a Reese's. That looks delicious. I'm going to buy it.
Did I need it? No.
Exactly.
I want it, so I'm getting it.
Exactly. Yeah. So when we can identify those emotions, and it isn't as academic as they are angry right now. So that it's as simple as, okay, there's something slightly going on with Dawn today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask a question. And the fact that I come up and ask the question, even if it doesn't change your mood, what you're going to say is, wow, he was actually paying attention. He actually, he knows enough and he gives a rip enough to ask a question and know that this is not the typical. Okay, what? And maybe that doesn't mean anything right now, but the next session that happens
Exactly.
And that's how you build, and this has to be a genuine thing. It can't be in a manipulative fashion. You can't be a wolf in sheep's clothing, so to speak. People can use that in nefarious ways, but if you're authentic with it, it works. And the hardest part is being genuine and authentic with it.
So this is work that you learned about, it sounds like, from the University of Georgia's work.
It
earlier?
This was the topic of my dissertation. And to be honest...
Okay, this is why we know so much.
Yeah, this was the topic of my dissertation. But to be quite honest with you, this whole line of research was what makes Brian Sabo a great coach? That's really what the question was.
I think that's why you went to each step in your educational career.
That's 100%
in search of the answer to that question.
It's 100% why. So that man being in my life at that point in time was so critical, and me having to answer, I thought it was content knowledge, meaning knowledge of strength and training or running fast on the track or whatnot. It wasn't any of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was who he is, what he does, and how he makes people feel. Mm-hmm. Because when you make people feel safe, they'll freaking run through a wall. They will do, and I call it the hard hat effect. And I ask my kids this often. I say, how many of you had a coach that if they said, all right, today you see that brick wall? We're running through it. How many of you would say, where's my helmet? When you have that sort of a coach, because that's the sort of a coach, not that we're running into brick walls, but it's a metaphor. When you have a coach and somebody who can create a culture where students or athletes or whoever are willing to say, give me the helmet. I want the helmet right now. When you have that, weights move faster. Heavier weights get lifted because people are giving you all of themselves. Even if they have 70% of them to give that day or 110% that day, they're giving you everything because they care about who you are and what you mean to them. And that's what Brian Sabo did phenomenally well at. And that's what I strive to learn more about and try to do in my classrooms and in my weight rooms.
He had a huge impact on you.
He did.
I love that. I love the story. I'm wondering, with the emotional intelligence work and dissertation work that you did, a term that on my mental health journey for the last 3.5 years, one of the terms I learned is co-regulation. Does that mean anything to you?
Honestly, no.
Okay. So co-regulation. So we've had marriage therapy. So you're in a relationship with someone and you get in tune, like you're talking about, with the athletes and the coaching. And let's say my husband walks in and I'm quiet and that's not normal. If he's in tune to me, then he'll be like, oh my gosh, are you okay? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And then start talking to me. And if I were in an elevated state of being upset, then co-regulation will look different. But the overall point is that temperature status that you were talking about. So if you're in tune and usually your normal state looks a certain way, but somebody's in tune to you in a relationship with you sees that that is different than your norm, then they can engage with you and help you come back to a more normal state. And that would be, I'm probably not doing the best job, therapists out there who know way more than me, but that would be a form of co-regulation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I would say that would be, the co-regulation part of that would be the extension or the outward manifestation of being emotionally intelligent. So for example, if you walk in, or if my wife walks in and she's had a terrible day and her demeanor is not normal. And I'm just like watching the TV and I don't ask any questions. And that would be me either A, not caring,
mm-hmm. or B, just being totally oblivious to the my wife's emotional temperature, if you will.
Yeah, emotional temperature. I like that phrase. Okay.
That to me is a lack of emotional intelligence. And I would say, have you ever had a conversation where I liken a conversation to you have a ball, a tennis ball, and you throw it back and forth?
That's what I prefer.
Now, yeah. So I throw the ball to you, you throw it back, so on and so forth. Or when you have a game of catch with like a three-year-old and you throw it and they hold it and they hold it and they hold it.
Yeah.
You ever have a conversation where you haven't said anything for like 5 minutes and you're giving all of the outward manifestations like, yeah, I'm no longer in this conversation. I'm about to exit stage right. And they don't have any idea.
Not in tune at all. I know some people.
That is, in my estimation, that is like the talk test for emotional intelligence. And that is being
interesting.
That is emotionally oblivious.
They're in their own world.
Yeah. And again, at times that can be advantageous for different people and dispositions and goals, pursuits. But for working with human beings, that's usually not productive.
No, it's not. What would you say is the most rewarding part now that you're in a faculty position of teaching exercise science? Because it seems like you went through a journey of education, mm-hmm. some practical experience, of course, along the way with your strength and conditioning job. That's where you came from. Mm-hmm. Now you're in a teaching role mm-hmm. with students who are going to be having jobs mm-hmm. as a strength and conditioning coach. What's the most rewarding part of that for you now on this side of the coin?
Easily when I see somebody doing something that they never thought possible.
Oh, and that's good.
One of the, this is just happens to be the demographic that it happens to the most, but there are a lot of females in my classes when we do the snatch. With the snatch, if you're not familiar, is a very violent, aggressive movement from, this is the hang snatch, but from just below the mid-thigh to overhead. Mm-hmm. And it is if you see this in a weight room, it is probably the most technically difficult movement in
it
a weight room.
It looks difficult.
And it's, again, if you Google snatch or watch a YouTube video on snatch and you'll get what I'm saying. When you have people, when I demo it the very first time, because we go from never having done it and in one session they are doing it. So mm-hmm. we go through a warm-up, they do it. When they see it the very first time, they go,
No way. I look like that too the first time I saw someone do it.
And then at the end of that session, you have it's time to go and they're like, one more. One more time. And I'm like and you see them do it and I have goosebumps right now thinking about because it's just that cool of a situation. And it's not just the demographic that I outlined, but it's anyone who has that experience, any way that I can push people and I see those aha moments.
Yeah.
I know that they're getting better and I know that they've left who they were behind and they're transcending their previous abilities. Those are those fill my cup up moments.
I really love that answer. What would you, is there much of a difference between coaching the general public and now coaching or teaching students strength and conditioning? Have you noticed anything different? Or does it seem like a similar approach?
I use a similar approach, but my approach is, it's hard for me to say. Mm-hmm. I think my approach is fairly unique. I'm a very energetic dude, if you can't tell.
So I'm picking up what you're putting down.
So I use energy a lot, almost to a fault. I try to infuse my energy into folks through a process called emotional contagion. So if you give energy, there's more energy in the room that can be used. Mm-hmm. So I've used that the whole time, and maybe that's just my technique. But I use the same approach with 67-year-old retired teachers and also people who were going to try to podium at the Olympic Games, but also students who want to go teach and be a physical therapist. I literally use the same tactics. Mm-hmm. I might use, my voice might be elevated or come down a little bit. Then it might change a little bit, but generally the tactics are like 90% the same.
I like that. That's some really good stuff. Now, we were talking about the top 5 tips. Mm-hmm. For strength and conditioning, and before we recorded, you were asking me for strength and conditioning coaches or for people working on strength and conditioning. And I found that so fascinating. I said, let's do both. So which one would you like to talk about first? Tips for the person working out to get stronger or the coaches helping them?
So I think I'll start with the coaches.
Okay.
So I would say, first, you got to know what you believe in, what your philosophy is on strength training, and that requires you to have some reflection. So for example, I believe in basic compound movements, and I'm not.
Okay, let's break that down for people.
Basic compound movements, meaning large, gross body movements. Excuse me. So like squats, like deadlifts, like lunges, front squats, back squats, bench press, things that can be. Things where loads can be moved through large ranges of motion.
Okay.
So examples of that would be front squat, back squat, lunge, bench press, deadlift, those sorts of things. I base my programs around that. And I think as a coach, if you don't understand what your philosophy is, you're going to get lost in the weeds, and you're going to get lost by every YouTube video, new one that comes out. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, where does this fit in? Your philosophy should answer that question. Your philosophy should guide what you do and how you do it. And I would be remiss if I did not say your philosophy should be guided in some way by science, whether that's how we adapt neurologically or physiologically or your understanding of periodization. You need to understand your philosophy, and your philosophy guides everything else that you're going to do.
Okay. One more question there for people. I'm sure there's a laugh or two does not know what periodization is.
So periodization is breaking a large chunk of time down into smaller chunks of time and giving them specific emphases.
Yeah. On what specific exercises they're
going to do. So it could be a fitness phase. So, for example, academics is actually periodized. So we go 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So your first year is called first year, or some people call it freshman year, then you have sophomore year, then junior, then that is a periodization of academics. Further, you have in the beginning of your academic career, you have more general classes and then you have more specific classes. That's periodized. Why? Because it's a timeline that's been broken down into smaller timelines that have specific emphases, general classes, more specific classes.
Okay.
It's the same thing.
So it
could look like general physical preparation or more specific preparation or competition.
Got it. Okay. So that's your number one tip is know your philosophy.
Know your philosophy.
For the strength coach. What would be your other four tips?
Other four tips, I would say.
For the coaches.
Know your strengths.
Oh, that's so good.
If you.
Yeah.
I believe in weightlifting, meaning one word, which is the sport of weightlifting, snatch and clean and jerk, or any derivatives therein. So you could do. For laughers, the movements are the snatch and the clean and jerk, but then there's iterations of those movements. So you can do, like for example, a mid-thigh clean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not important what that means, but it's just little iterations thereof. I use those. Why? Because I've been schooled on them, and I know how to use them, and I know how to coach them. If I did not, I would not use them.
I see. So, okay. Use the methods.
Yep. If you don't know how to use a chainsaw, you shouldn't be using a chainsaw.
Agree.
So,
that could be really bad.
And I do think unless we're going to go learn how to use a chainsaw the weightlifting derivatives, we shouldn't be programming them. We need to, A, know your philosophy, B, know what you're good at teaching, and don't try to be somebody you're not. Maybe that's my third one. Don't try to be somebody you're not.
Know your strengths. What was the first one? Oh, my goodness.
Philosophy?
Yes. Thank you.
Know your strengths.
Yes.
And don't try to be somebody you're not. Or maybe the second one's more aptly, use the tools in your tool belt.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're not trying to improve the tools or get new tools in your tool belt, but it does mean that you need to know squarely what tools are in that tool belt and how to use them.
That's good. So now we have two more.
So four would be you need to have a general recipe for every exercise that you program.
Okay, what do you mean by that? Because I have an idea in my own head from my experience.
You should know what your main cues are. You should know how you're going to teach it. So you should be able to, at any point in time, if Dawn, you are the strength conditioning coach I'm talking to, and you say, I'm going to program the bench press. All right, walk over to the bench press and show me how you're going to do this. Give me the key points that you want. So do you want the scapula down and back? Where are your feet at? How are you? Where are you at on the bench? You need to be able to detail what you're trying to have with each exercise instead of just saying, go over there, lay down and do this. You need to be able to detail what you want and how you want it done.
I see. I really appreciate that. I would appreciate that much from a strength and conditioning coach, because lots of times you will get programs and they're do three sets of bench, 8 to 10 reps each. Now go do this. And if you're new at it, you're like, am I doing this right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. So that would be really valuable.
Yeah, you need to have a recipe for each exercise. So that's number four, correct? Mm-hmm. Number five, this one is maybe piggybacking off the last one, but use energy. It's free and it's really effective.
You mean our own energy?
Yep. Use internal energy. Use, okay. And this is for the coaches. This is for folks. Now, I'm an energetic dude, as I've said, and I use that a lot. But when you can cue somebody, instead of saying push, you say push. And you say it loudly, and they actually believe that you want them to do it better, the barbell moves faster.
I believe that, yeah.
Meaning they get more out of the activity when you cue them that way. And by the way, this works for 87-year-olds too. You just don't yell as loud.
That's a good point.
So use energy. I think that's something that, now don't get me wrong, you can't only use energy and forget all the things that I've already said. But if we're doing all the things I've already said and you use energy, you could give me a program that is not all that, that is very bare bones, mm-hmm. and use energy and prescribed with vigor and done with vigor and a coach that's using energy, and you're going to have a phenomenal program as opposed to somebody who is very technically sound,
mm-hmm.
but is not really having their athletes get after it or isn't priming their athletes to actually give them a maximal effort. Giving a maximal effort, specifically for strength conditioning coaches, is absolutely huge. If you can teach that skill and how to do that, you're going to be pretty successful at what you do.
Yeah. My son played, and people have been following the podcast or following our comedy, they know that my son played in the NFL. So I've seen a lot of gyms and a lot of athletes over the years, and one of the funnest things when he was playing college ball, he did an all-access. And if you're not familiar with that, Laffers, is when the TV crew comes in and they kind of follow the athlete behind the scenes throughout their entire day, and they would show the lifting workouts. And they are hyped up mm-hmm. in that weight room mm-hmm. doing some extraordinary things, mm-hmm. and it's the coaches specifically. And other players,
yeah.
that energy you're talking about, and get the maximum effort out of the athletes with that. I could definitely see that.
Yeah. And a quick caveat there, it has to be an authentic deal.
Yes.
And I say this because it's one thing to go rah, rah, rah. It's another thing to go rah, rah, and they actually believe, the athletes within themselves and the coaches themselves believe that what we're doing is worthwhile and it's going to make a difference. And you might not be able to see that if you're not the trained eye, but you can feel that. And that's probably more important than almost everything else I've talked about, because that's about culture and that's about how the leader of that culture or the people within that culture believe and put their best foot forward.
I like that. Now for those of us who want to improve our strength and conditioning in 2025, what kind of recommendations, advice would you give us? Regular people.
To increase strength and conditioning. Mm-hmm. So I would say, so are we assuming that this person is already going to the gym? Like, and they are, we're enhancing them?
Yes.
Because we did talk about like the getting somewhere and yep. that stuff. But yes. beyond that, so yep. we're assuming they're
so
there.
So they're starting to work out and they okay. want to improve it.
So
once they are at the moment.
Got it. So yeah. assuming that they're already going, what I would say is pick two or three movements that you really want to get good at. Mm-hmm. And that could be a machine. That could be, oh, I want to do the front squat. And do that movement for like 4 weeks. And that doesn't mean only that movement, but create a structure where you're focused on and giving the most energy to those activities. And do that for 4 weeks and track your progress.
Mm-hmm.
So write down how much weight you did for how many reps and keep the reps somewhat similar. So let's say you do 3 sets of 5 and on weeks 1, 2, 3, and 4, now you have a progress report. So you say, oh man, I was really, sandbagging it on week number 2, or I didn't really give much effort. Or what will likely happen is you're going to see you did this much weight, then you did this much weight, then you did this much weight, then you did this much weight.
And it went up.
And that is going to feel really good. And that's personally what I do. I choose 1 or 2 exercises to really put my focus on. That doesn't mean I only do those exercises, but I focus that on because that keeps me motivated. And I am motivated by the results of, okay, I can lift a little bit more weight, a little bit more weight. And then when I get tired of that exercise, I do something different. So I make sure that A, I have something that's motivating me. I'm focusing on one exercise or a couple of different exercises throughout my regimen. But then B, then I will insert a different activity that I also care about. So I have what I call headliner exercises.
A headliner exercise.
Almost like you go to a concert. There's a headliner band.
Or a comedy show.
Yeah, or a headliner. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I will, I'll focus on those. And then when I get tired of one, I make sure I go to another one that I'm as interested in or eager to try to get better at to keep my juices flowing.
Okay. Before we get to your other 4 tips, with the 2 exercises that you're picking, do you ideally want to balance them out? What I mean by that is if you, let's say, pick bench press, then you're going to do a back exercise as the second one?
Yeah.
Or does that matter?
Most of the time for me, it's large compound movement. So it's usually back squat, front squat, deadlift. Sometimes it's bench press. Sometimes it's a row. But most of the time, or it's a clean or a snatch or something. So again, my examples might not get the laugher, like really link to what the laughers are thinking, if that makes
sense. Right. I wanted to clarify because I think you're using 2 exercises where it's more full body movement.
Exactly. But you could absolutely do, let's say bench press is one of your movements that you're focused on. Then the next day, maybe you do the bent over barbell row or the one arm dumbbell row to do that, to balance the body out, to make sure that you are pushing and you're pulling in each workout.
So they might not be ready for the snatch yet.
Absolutely. This is me absolutely saying, first you need to be safe when you do that. If you're going to attempt that, make sure the equipment is such, and then don't do anything that makes you feel unsafe, please.
I like that. So that's a first, almost a get started in a way to take it to the next level and to exercise and build upon it and track it. What would be tip number 2?
I think for laughers out there, one of the mistakes I see with my students, they want to change exercises every week.
Yeah, we get bored, and is it working?
I would say
overthinking it.
I would personally say it might be slightly boring, but at the same time, if we're progressing and we're putting good effort into each exercise, we should be seeing some progress in each of those exercises. So have those being done consistently for 3 or 4 weeks before we change, because otherwise, we are like Doug from Up. Squirrel. Every time we walk into a weight room, we're choosing something different. And it's almost like another analogy coming. If you use crock pots, it's almost like putting chicken in a crock pot for like 20 minutes.
Mm.
Like, what do you have at the end of the 20 minutes? You have lukewarm chicken that you're not going to eat. But when we bathe the tissue in a stimulus, meaning the same exercises for like 4 weeks, you have a crockpot meal that has been in there for 12 hours and is delicious when it comes out instead of lukewarm chicken that's not ready to be eaten.
Got it. I think I'm seeing a theme of don't change it up so quickly. Stick with it till you have gained some, till you've made some gains. They use the word that way in the weight room.
Yes.
Making gains.
We absolutely need to have enough of an exposure to a stimulus for it to elicit an adaptation in our physiology. If we do not see repeated exposure, we're not really going to get better. It's going to be, if we do get better, it's by chance rather than by design.
Attention. Yeah. Okay. I'm liking this. How about number 3?
Number 3, do large compound movements first. And then work to more auxiliary movements.
Oh, that is a very good tip because you can tire yourself out going the other way.
Yep. So the more you don't like the exercise, meaning the more whole body stimulation there is, the higher it should be in your exercise selection for the day. Meaning, if you have like a bicep curl and a back squat, the back squat needs to come before the bicep curl. And here's why. Because the day that gets skipped, which I'm not a huge proponent of bodybuilding methodology for the general populace, but the day that gets skipped is leg day, which is arguably the most helpful for every single person or the laughers out there. Why? Because it utilizes the most muscle mass, which is going to do a lot of great things for us metabolically and from a strength perspective. It's going to give us the best load or the best stimulus for strength, which, by the way, if we're stronger, we're probably going to live longer. Research supports that pretty well.
They have much more mobility and less pain, because even our tendons that support our joints that have us standing upright, they need that attention as well.
Absolutely.
That's the big breakdown as we age lots of times. Is the lack of strength and conditioning that people are doing.
Yeah. So that's number three. So number four would be have a plan before you walk in the gym.
Oh, it's kind of like your strength coach, except in reverse.
Yep. So even if it is, all right, I am outside of the gym and I have to write down in my notes in my phone, I'm going to do exercise A, B, C, and D. And this is kind of a second point to this. We probably shouldn't, depending on how long you're going to be in there. And if you're going to be in there for about an hour, we probably shouldn't do more than five, maybe six exercises. If we're doing any more than that, we're probably not putting sufficient effort or warming up and doing enough volume to make those exercises worthwhile. So less is more when it comes to exercises. The answer is likely not more exercises. The answer is putting more effort to lift a greater load in those exercises while being safe, mind you. While being safe.
Big point we're bringing home. Be safe.
While being safe with good technique. And that assumption goes across anything that I've said is with sound technique.
Yeah, sound technique. And professionals are out there to help you. And again, there's a lot of resources and videos out there. For free, you can Google for form on these different exercises. So you can check them out before you even go hit the gym. Have some idea.
Absolutely.
What you're doing. So that was number four. What about number five?
Everyone needs to be doing some sort of power training.
Okay, Todd. What does that look like exactly?
So what is the definition
of power?
I will say the definition of power. Power is force produced quickly, essentially, or force times velocity in a physics perspective. Now, what does that mean? And more importantly, why is that important? So power activities are activities that are performed with a maximal intent to move a weight or an implement or your body mass quickly. And most importantly, why is that important? First, as we age, aging discriminates, particularly of fiber type. So we lose what are called type 2 muscle fibers, or your fast twitch muscle fibers deteriorate at a faster rate than do your type 1s. This is really important for fall prevention. This is also really important for any activity that you need to do somewhat expediently, which I would challenge laughers to go through their day and think about what activities would actually be enhanced if I enhanced my power. If we injected you with 50 cc's more of power output or power output capabilities, my guess would be you could put your pants on with a lower chance of falling. And I say this because I put my pants on this morning and I was hobbling around and I quickly was able to jump on one leg one more step so I didn't fall down. So that's what I'm talking about. So those little moments in your life where, let's say you clip the edge of the stair. You have more power output, and you might be able to reposition the limb and get the limb down so you don't fall.
I see,
So, and it doesn't, by the way, have to look like snatches and cleans and jerks. It could look like you going up onto your tippy toes and then you going into a squat stance really, really quickly, or as quickly as one can. It doesn't have to be somebody training to be an Olympic X, Y, or Z. All it has to be is that you are trying to control your own body mass or another mass quickly. That's all it has to be.
Okay.
And what that's going to do is help you hold on to those fast twitch muscle fibers and those high threshold motor units a little bit better. And again, check me on this, please. power output or power training for elderly individuals or older individuals is something we need to be doing
a lot more of, actually.
Yeah. And it's, again, anything could be turned into a power movement. You getting out of your chair
by
quickly,
doing it fast.
By doing it quickly, again, safely.
Yeah.
Not with no regard for form or technique.
Right.
But safely. Doing things, if you can do a squat at this pace,
mm-hmm.
and then you do a squat at this pace, you are training for power.
So it's a bit of a HIIT workout with...
Not quite.
Hmm.
Not quite.
Okay.
Because then we're... The high-intensity interval training part turns it into a circuit.
That's right.
I'm talking about changing the intentionality with which we do exercises.
I see. Okay.
So less of a focus on metabolics or being tired after the workout and more about activating high-threshold motor units and moving things quickly with control. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. That was a good tip, Laffers. We're getting so many great tips from this health and fitness series. It's going to be an exciting year.
I'm looking forward to hearing.
It's going to be great. Well, I want to ask another question before mm-hmm. we get out of here. Yeah. What is a fun or surprising fact about strength training that most people don't know? I know.
Ooh.
I know.
That most people don't know. I would actually probably say I'm going to have a cop-out answer, which is the what I said earlier, yeah. Everyone should be doing power training.
Okay.
Everyone should be doing power training. And contrary, I don't know if there's any evidence that would suggest that weight training is bad.
Yeah, I haven't really read
the only evidence that I would see that would support that is when people get injured. And when people get injured, mm-hmm. oftentimes they are not abiding by the technical model or the technique that should be adhered to in a given exercise.
That's true. But then it can come back and be very important, some level of resistance training and their rehab.
Absolutely.
Absolutely not in the acute phase.
Maybe I would say this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying, though.
If you're breathing, we should probably be training.
I like it.
And I think it was Bill Bowerman who said, everyone who has a body is an athlete. Mm-hmm. It's just what level of an athlete are you? Meaning, what sort of athletic things do you have to do in your life, whether that's gardening or whether that's throwing a shot or
picking up your kid
and throwing them or getting yeah. in the pool, getting out of the pool, whatever it happens, getting on the commode and off the commode safely. So I think not everyone has to get under a barbell. I think people would be better if we did get under barbells for lots of different reasons, one of which being the psychology of it, but the other being the physiology of it. I think we would be better for that if we moved more. Weight training is a part of that. It's not the entire pie of that, but it allows us to remain more robust for a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. And increases our quality of life.
Absolutely.
Hands down. Well, you have been a fantastic resource for us today. So if a laugher would like to get in touch with you because they have more questions or want to just connect with you, how would they do that?
That would be my JMU-issued email, which is magrumed@jmu.edu. That is magrumed@jmu.edu.
Excellent. And laughers will be sure to put that exact JMU-issued email address into the show notes so that you can easily find it as well. So it won't matter if you're working out, hopefully you're working out or driving or whatever you're doing, you can get to it easy enough. And thank you for joining us today, Eric, and sharing with us all your wealth of knowledge and strength and conditioning. It truly has been a pleasure, and I keep learning. Even with my background in health and fitness, I keep learning more from all these experts. So thanks again for coming on the show today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You better believe it. And also, laughers, I hope that you learned something today and it was fun and engaging for you as well. If you liked our podcast and our time together, please give it a like, share, tell a friend. We absolutely treasure you. Cannot do or even gotten this far in the 200s of episodes without your support. So I love you so much. Thanks again for tuning in. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, Laffers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womack and Friends. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to a FWAF show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to thefunnywomacks.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.